You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show
on Seattle Sports Station.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Are you ready for a good game?
I have something to do. I have a whole segment planned.
You got to give the people what they want.
The people haven't had what they want in like a month because you never show up for work anymore.
Yeah, the people what they want. Good morning, Mike Salk. Hey, good
you
morning.
You still work here?
Mara, Justin.
Morning.
Yeah, I missed you guys. Look, so, this is what happened, y'all. I'm in the hallway. I'm like, man, can I come on? No, I can't have you on today. I got stuff to do. Oh, I have stuff to do. Well, can I at least tell the people that I'm going to be on tomorrow? Okay, come on in. Salk, what you
but
got
now,
to do?
But now I invited you in. You're never going to leave.
I mean, what do you got to do? It's like a squatter, right? It's like, I got squatter's rights. What's up? Wait, real quick. What are you getting ready to talk about that I cannot come on with you?
I can't tell you that. It's a secret.
What, Mariner baseball?
No.
And how
maybe?
And how loved they are now?
No.
Because they was fighting?
It's not about the fighting.
Okay.
It's about
Jerry. By the way, they did play well yesterday.
They did.
And maybe that sparked them.
Yeah, no kidding.
Maybe it's like the sunflower seeds with Earl Thomas back in the day. That's a long story. Anyway, but you know
what
I mean?
See like, the kid, you see the guy throwing the sunflower seeds out on the field at the end of the fight?
Did they really?
The guy from the Angels was mad that he got thrown out, so he took a whole bucket of sunflower seeds and tossed them out onto the field.
Yeah, yeah.
Then he threw all the gum out onto the field.
Can I ask you to listen to the question happy. Before you kick me out?
Oh, jeez. What?
What?
No.
Why do you guys love fights in baseball?
No, go away, get out of here.
I'm just asking.
We'll see you tomorrow.
I love you, bro.
30. Congratulations on getting married, by the way.
Oh, thank you, man.
There you go.
Appreciate
the ring is gigantic.
I invested in the ring because I wanted to actually invest in a marriage.
Because this one's gonna last.
This one's gotta last.
That ring looks heavy,
bro. It's heavy. Woke me up.
Woke you up.
A few times.
I imagine G turning over from like his right side to his left, and he has to like swing his arm over, and it takes like momentum. Like he's got to use his left hand.
I get
to
what he's
right
saying,
over.
Though. He's making sure everyone knows that.
Is Baker here yet?
Not yet.
Oh, okay.
Give it two more weeks.
Oh,
go away.
You want Baker here so bad, don't you?
I just want someone other than Drew and Gino. That's all.
Have you met them yet?
No, they seem like nice guys, or at least you know one of them does.
Yeah, it's kind of how I defend you. You're a nice guy. All right, love you, bro.
G. Scott will be in tomorrow morning at 8:30 for a much longer conversation than we just have time for. Well, now,
that
I
was
promise.
Just like a drive-by, just real quick pick up.
Gosh, he's exhausting. I never should have gone outside and said hello.
It's been a while since we've heard from him, though.
It's been like a month. He never shows up for work anymore. It's embarrassing.
That energy left back, though.
My gosh. Yeah, he does have a lot of energy. Like, he's got like a month of stored up energy, and he's going to unleash it upon us tomorrow at 8:30. Lucky us. I told you, and this is why I couldn't talk to G, because this is very important that I have to get this out. We were talking about Julio, and I said every time I think of Julio, I think of someone else. And it's not that he reminds me of him, but I can't think of and talk about Julio without also not thinking about Jared Kelnick. Like, it just one name is so connected to the other in my mind that when Julio does something as well as he's been doing it for the last month, I can't help but also think about Kelnick. Toiling away in AAA, not able to, you know, make his way back up to the big leagues, etc. And so this afternoon, I'm going to go down there. I'm going to go chat with Kelnick. I've got an interview scheduled with him before his game for the Rainiers this afternoon. So I'll head down to Tacoma. Somebody asked me where I was going to play golf ahead of time. I couldn't figure out how to make all that work. I thought about it. Obviously, I was like, okay, could I go down, play Chambers, then go see Kelnick? But I got to talk to him at like 4. I don't think there's enough time to leave here after the show at 10, play Chambers, and then, because, you know, I couldn't play there till at least 11, 5-hour round. Now I don't have time to talk to Kelnick, so I don't see how it works out. Believe me, I went through all of the...
Maybe you still had a driving range or something, though.
That's possible, but I, you know, if I'm going to go all the way to Chambers, I want to go play Chambers. So anyway, I'm going to go talk to Kelnick this afternoon, and I wonder how he's doing. I wonder how he handled yesterday. The Mariners called up a guy yesterday named Marcus Wilson. Okay? Did you guys see Marcus Wilson? He made his major league debut.
25, I think.
Yeah. Did you see what happened?
Yeah.
He had a walk.
He had a long, good at bat.
Right.
Got walked, and I think they balked him to second, and then he ended up at third.
Yep. So good for Marcus Wilson. But I found myself thinking about Jared Kelnick, watching Marcus Wilson get called up. How do you think that felt for him?
I would hope that it felt fine because it had been communicated to him so well ahead of time that what is best for him and the path he's on, and you may see some things that come around that may confuse you or make you feel this way or that way, but these are the tracks we have you on.
To be fair, Marcus Wilson's got a little bit of pop. He's hit 12 home runs in Tacoma this year. He's got an OPS of 806, so he's obviously hitting the ball. But when I'm Jared Kelnick and I see a guy hitting 209 get called up, I think it's got to hurt a little bit. I think no matter how well it's communicated.
And for a guy as competitive as he is, yeah.
He wants to be up here, and I don't blame him. All of that being said, I think that what the Mariners did was great. It does not make me worried about Jared Kelnick one bit. He needs to improve. He needs to get right. He needs whatever he missed in his development that took him to the big leagues too early. Of all the things that Jerry DePoto has done in his, what, 7 years or so that he's been here in Seattle? Of all the things that have happened, the biggest sin I think they've made was bringing Jared Kelnick up too early. I understand their logic. I understand why they did it. I understand the idea that he had proven everything he needed to and they needed to find a level at which he would fail before, you know, I get it. I understand the logic. I still think it was a mistake. Thankfully, though, they still have a chance to get it right. And I think they're doing that now. He's only 22 years old. And I know that there is a group of people out there that is frustrated by Kelnick and you think he's dumb and he strikes out too much and this, that, and the other. I get it. I understand your arguments. I disagree. And I'm going to use one number to disagree with you. 22. He's only 22 years old. And when you start thinking about what that means in terms of all the guys around him, do you remember Tyler O'Neill? He was traded from Marco Gonzalez, right? And everyone was like, oh, Tyler O'Neill, not going to make this and that. Tyler O'Neill, when he made his debut in the majors, when he like first started and got to the majors, was 23.
Really?
All the struggles that we saw here with Tyler O'Neill as he was trying to get it together in the minor leagues, he was younger than Kelnick. He was 22, 21, 22. He didn't make his major league debut in St. Louis until he was 23.
And he raked that first year, right?
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
He's 22.
Yeah.
He's 2 years younger than Taylor Trammell, who's 24. He's 3 years younger than Cal Raleigh, who's 25. Kelnick needs this. They brought him up too early. I honestly believe that they did. And so I'm excited to go down and talk to him and hear how he's doing. He's a thoughtful kid. He thinks a lot about the game. By all accounts, the Mariners, now that he's kind of got his head screwed on straight and his confidence back, are really getting him to work on the things that he needs to work on. And so I'm excited to hear about all that. We'll play you the interview tomorrow morning. I think it's 7:30 is likely when we will do that because we have to make room for G. Scott, obviously, at 8:30. Jared Kelnick on the show tomorrow.
Real quick, was the first time you spoke with Kelnick in person at spring training?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm interested to see what his personality is, if you've noticed any shifts or anything.
I will do that. We'll see if he even remembers me. I'm sure he will not.
It's like rings on a tree.
Huh?
Like rings on a tree. Like, see how much he's grown.
Just as long as he doesn't give me the same awful courtesy laugh that he gave me in spring training, it should all be pretty much fine. All right. That's tomorrow. You'll hear. Thanks, Jared. We'll hear from Jared at 7:30 tomorrow morning. Up next, I'll tell you everything you need to know. And then Jerry DePoto will join us in 20 minutes at 8:30. His team's playing some good baseball, and I haven't heard anything from Jerry since the little brouhaha down in Anaheim, so we'll ask him about that as well. Don't go anywhere. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Yeah, don't look now. The Mariners are starting to play some good baseball. They've won 7 of 10 games. They've gotten themselves back into the race, at least in the wild card race, 5.5 now out of the final wild card spot. So they're tied with the Angels. Their run differential's at 0. So they've scored as many runs as they've given up on the year. And look, that comes courtesy of playing some good ball, as I said, and a nice victory yesterday, 9-3 over Baltimore. A little bit of everything in that game. They had bunt base hits. They had swinging bunt base hits. J.P. Crawford looking a little guilty as he made his way over to first. They had balls bouncing off bags, and finally Julio provided the thunder.
Best be ready, and the 2-1 pitch to Julio. Swing and a well-hit ball deep to left center field. Going and going in. A bird deck. Goodbye, baseball. Holy smokes, and a mile by Julio Rodriguez with his 12th home run of the season.
I love it. Rick going, holy smokes. And a my, oh my, a little homage in there as well. The kid's really tremendous. We've been talking about him all morning just because it seems like every game he does something different to make your jaw drop. The night before, he helps him win the game with an athletic play, sliding into first base and avoiding a tag. Last night, it was just, or yesterday, it was just going yard to a place you're really not supposed to hit the ball. Scott's service is just as wowed as the rest of us.
Julio Rodriguez, it's it is. We got a lot of fun ahead of us here. I think the whole organization, Seattle fan base, everything. This guy is some kind of special. We're watching it play out before our eyes, and you know that's a long ways to hit a home run in this ballpark. You don't see it too often. He's been right on everything all series.
Certainly has. Chris Flexen was pretty good yesterday, went six innings. Sam Haggerty getting on base a whole bunch of times, three hits in the game without really crushing the ball or anything like that. He had a bunt base hit in there as well. And then Jesse Winker continues to hit. Two more yesterday, raised his OPS up to 696, so that's within striking distance of the major league average, which is 706. Anyway, I'm going to guess he'll finish up a whole lot higher than that. Oakland in town for four, starting tonight. Another chance to make some hay against a team that's on pace to lose well over 100 games. Logan Gilbert and Adrian Martinez will go in the opener. And then roster moves before the game yesterday. Taylor Trammell, unfortunately, heads to the injured list. Team brought up Haggerty, who we mentioned, and a kid named Marcus Wilson to make his debut. They sent Kevin Padlo back to Tacoma.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Yeah, try to stay with me here. Day three of the Deshaun Watson hearings in front of former federal judge Sue Robinson, but interesting news started to leak out yesterday. So the AP had a report suggesting that the league might accept a suspension in the range of some 6 to 8 games rather than appeal anything that is under the full year that the league had requested. Well, the headline obviously looks bad for the league and Goodell, but let's try to understand the process a little bit here. First of all, Goodell does have the ultimate say in a suspension. If there's an appeal by either side, so literally, if the NFL appeals her decision, Goodell gets to step in and impose whatever discipline he wants. It's sort of absurd. Two, the only way he doesn't get final say is if the judge decides there should be zero suspension. And so maybe by leaking out that they would accept a smaller number might make her say, okay, well, I'll put it out there so that he doesn't just appeal my decision. Personally, what I think is going to happen here, or what's happening, is that Goodell is trying to make people who are hardliners like myself a little bit happier. That he's lowering the expectation game. He's not going to go the full 2 years, which is what I think he should do and almost has to do based on what baseball did with Trevor Bauer. But, you know, when he starts off at 6 to 8 and then Goodell steps in and says, no, we're not going to accept less than a year, all of a sudden it looks better than the alternative. I don't know if it's going to be effective, and I think the whole thing is kind of lame.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
October 3rd, start marking your calendar now, especially if you're a basketball fan. The NBA will be here at Climate Pledge. Blazers, Clippers are going to play a preseason game here. A few thoughts on this. One, certainly great for fans of basketball. Two, another reminder that the NBA is going to return here as soon as it's ready to have another team. But also, it does feel a little bit sad. It's supposed to be the other way around. I said earlier, when I was a kid, the Celtics used to do this. They'd go barnstorming in Providence and Hartford and some of the other smaller cities around Boston. Portland doesn't do this to us. We do this to Portland. Just doesn't feel quite right. I think that's everything you need to know. And we do that quarter past every hour here on the Mike Salk Show. What do you think of the Goodell situation yesterday? Stacey and I were talking about it for a while we were at the game yesterday. And trying to make heads or tails of what's going on with these reports and the 6 to 8 games, et cetera.
Because you guys have donuts on the line.
We do. That's true. Yes.
So you feel like you're going
to
lose that.
Yeah. Were you here when I made what's turning out to be a bad bet, Maura?
No. Well, you're feeding into her.
I know.
Bad habit.
Feeding the addiction. But I think she might actually win this bet. So I bet Stacey that Watson's suspension would be at least a year and a half. And because I honestly felt like it would be 2 years, she felt like it would be one. And then all of a sudden, it was like 6 to 8 games. She pointed out correctly, and I'm sure she'll talk more about it on her show with Michael Bumpus coming up at 10 o'clock this morning, that Jaron Reed got 6 for his incident. This is 25 cases. Like it doesn't make any sense. So I don't believe that would be the case. I honestly think that this is a setup and that at the end of the day, he will get a year. And because it's not 6 to 8 games, people like me who think he deserves 2 years plus are supposed to go, well, they did up it from 6 to 8 games, so maybe it's not so bad. And I don't know. I feel like the expectation should be higher.
That. They like to test the court of public opinion first, and this would be a way for them to do that.
Yeah, kind of little floating trial balloons, right? Like, oh, how would people feel if it was 6 to 8 games? And I'd be really mad if he only got 6 to 8 games. How would people feel if it was 2 years? Personally, I think he deserves 2 years. I think Trevor Bauer and Major League Baseball has set a standard here. I don't know why the NFL wouldn't try to live up to that.
Let's say it's a year. If anything else came out after the suspension was handed down, would it be able to be changed?
That's
the thing
they've been sort of arguing about, right? That's why they want an indefinite suspension of no less than 1 year.
Okay.
So basically, it is a 1 year suspension, but if more information comes out, they can add on to it at that point.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
We'll see where
it
goes.
I don't love it.
No, I don't love it either. I feel like the NFL is trying to pull the wool over our eyes a little bit.
Well, and I saw someone text in earlier. That's fine because he hasn't been found guilty of anything. But the NFL has always had their own. You don't have to be found guilty of anything. It's right. If you make us look bad.
Right. And they've made him look horrible and continue to make him look horrible. And by the way, Trevor Bauer wasn't found guilty either and received a 2-year suspension. Guilt in a court of law has nothing to do with whether or not the NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball, NHL is allowing you to play in their league. It's a privilege, not a right. So, yeah, we'll wait. I'm gonna avoid getting upset yet, and we'll sort of wait and see what happens and which direction this goes next. All right, coming up next, Jerry DePoto will join me. It's quite a week for his baseball team. What did he think of the whole thing? I want to know where he was watching and how he reacted when it all went down on Sunday, so we'll ask him that. And a whole lot more coming up. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
You're listening to the Mike Salk Show,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio
on Seattle Sports Station.
Well, it's been quite a week, that's for sure. Mariner baseball's been pretty interesting. I told you I ran into our guy Darren, who works over. He's like, I don't care how much content you put out on the fight, I will consume it. He's just completely 100% invested in the whole thing. It was fun to go over to the ballpark yesterday, see the bats come alive, and another series win for the Mariners. So with that in mind, let's talk to Jerry.
The Jerry DePoto Show, presented by Seattle Pump and Equipment on Seattle Sports Station.
Well, Jerry, it was quite a week.
You can say that again.
I promise that I will ask questions about something other than what happened in Anaheim on Sunday, but I have a lot of questions about what happened because I'm fascinated by the whole, I mean, I love unwritten rules and baseball and all of it kind of coming together. So what is it, what is that moment like for someone in your position to watch? Are you just terrified someone's going to get hurt? Or like what was that like for you?
Yeah, I mean, you captured it with terrified someone's going to get hurt. It's it's just senseless. The whole thing is ridiculous and wildly outdated, regardless of the unwritten rules. It is what it is. In that we have suspensions to deal with, and our reactions cost us. But you're in a situation where people are actually throwing things at you, and it's a very high charged emotional scene, and I'm not sure what the guys are supposed to do, frankly, in just walking away from people throwing at you intentionally. And it was very clear it was intentional. So I think, again, I say it's outdated in that this was a more common thing in the 60s, 70s, 80s, even in the 90s. But over the last 20, 25 years, it's found its way out of the game. And I think that's where it should stay.
You know, you ask a good question. What are you supposed to do? It's something I asked a few times this week. What are you supposed to do? What is the appropriate reaction when another team has, declared their intention by changing their starting pitcher for the day to a sacrificial lamb and then thrown at not just one, but two of the better players on your team? I don't know what else your team is supposed to do at that point.
No, I mean, it really was, I'll call it crisis management. And it's not really something you can train for. And, now that the team, especially the guys that were at the center of it, have been through this, maybe the next time there's a different reaction. But again, once you bake in the competitive emotion, it's hard to determine what will happen in that moment, which is, you know, that type of chaos that we watched on Sunday is the result of the irresponsible, I guess, plan coming in, is that you can't predict what's going to happen. And as a result, you know, two players, one on either side, was injured. You know, we lost three of our better players. We're going to have to play most of the next 2 weeks a man short, which is a challenge. And that's, you know, for teams that are trying to claw their way back into a race, it's not good. And it's just not good look for the game. It's, again, outdated and something we need to move past pretty quickly in baseball.
So how are you supposed to pitch to an all-time great player, as we talked about him last week, one of the greatest players who's ever played the game, who crushes specifically low fastballs? What are you supposed to do when you face him?
I guess I don't understand the notion that we were throwing a pitch at Mike Trout, or that Eric Swanson was throwing a pitch at Mike Trout. To me, is just I want to say absurd, because I know Eric Swanson, I know our general talk and chatter. He's trying to hit a spot up and in, and it was very clear in that inning, you know, that Eric, he's a high fastball pitcher who was missing high. And, you know, and unfortunately one of those did sail up and in a little too high. And, you know, that's one of the perils of getting in the batter's box. And unfortunately that moment happened, but I don't think there was any intent. And frankly, I would be surprised if anyone, any rational thinker, thought that there was a great deal of intent. But what we saw on Sunday was the result of irrational thinking. And, you know, and it escalated, and hopefully that's the last we see of it, because I know the next irrational thing would be letting it perpetuate and starting it again. It needs to end on Sunday, and everybody can go back to having their careers and their seasons, et cetera.
So the only question I'll follow up there with, and only because I've heard this for some guys who played the game, is, hey, regardless of intent, if you throw near Mike Trout, you're not doing a good enough job of making sure you don't throw near one of the great guys in the game. You know, what do you make of that sort of an argument?
I don't really buy it, to be honest with you. And I pissed enough in the league to know that for the most part, if you just take the great hitters in any era and put them to the side, most of them, you want to pitch them up and in or down and away. Mm-hmm. That's where the adage comes from. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's, again, you don't want to see what we saw on Saturday night, which is pitch sailing up and in near someone's head. It is a dangerous thing, as we know very well on a couple of occasions this year. But in that case, I don't think there was any intent. It didn't hit him. And, you know, frankly, there aren't a lot of pitchers in the league that are precise in throwing those pitches up and in or down and away, which is why players like Mike are able to feast.
Talking to Jerry DePoto, as we do every week, you mentioned that you'll play the better part of the next few weeks without a player at a time. Do you have more info on what that will look like and what the suspensions will look like?
Well, we're still waiting for confirmation on what the suspensions will look like, but the actual suspensions are likely to start for us as early as tonight. So, you know, for the next 2 weeks or so, our hope is that we get a game or two knocked off each one of the suspensions. And I believe that's a possibility. The league is going to allow us to stagger the suspensions so that we're not forced to play three men short, even for a day. And, you know, we'll be able to run them back to back to back. And, you know, and again, it's not ideal, but you can manage your way through with a 25-man roster. It's a much different thing when you're trying to manage through with a 23-man roster.
Has anybody
and just 12 position players.
Has anybody figured out what Julio did to get suspended yet?
No. You know, and Julio, like so many, you know, we're running around, they're in a pile, and there are certain things that happen. And I've already heard feedback from some that were in the middle of the mix that there were quite a few people who, you know, both gave and received in that pile that weren't cited. And that's only due to the fact that the umpires, by and large, aren't in the middle of the mix. They're not in the pile. Mm-hmm. And they can't see everything. And we, you know, by virtue of the fact that we're watching on video, can't see everything. But, you know, that being said, none of us can come up with anything on Julio. And And, you know, hopefully we can get that just erased and Julio can move on. But, you know, once you've been charged, that's hard to do.
Just talking about Julio, I mean, what he's done over the last couple of games, I mean, obviously the last couple of weeks, but just seeing the number of ways he can affect a game between the athletic play on Saturday night, two nights ago, it wasn't Saturday, in my dreams it was Saturday, a couple of games ago to avoid the tag at first base, and then the home run he hit yesterday, he really, Jerry, he's so special. It's really, we're running out of words to describe him.
And it's happening so early in his career. It's, you know, he has incredible talent. He fills up every toolbox with a plus to elite level tool. And I think his greatest tool is just how much he loves the game. It turns into a competitive advantage for him. And he never has I shouldn't say never because his career is still so young. But one of the most refreshing things about Julio is like any other player on earth, he's going to go out and he's going to take his 0-for-3 or 0-for-4, and he might take a 1-for-8. But he has a way about him where he comes back to work on the third day, and he's got a smile on his face, and he's working hard, and he finds a way to chip in 2 hits, and he takes a walk. And somewhere while he was going 0-for, he makes a super athletic catch, and you'd never know he was 0-for his last 8 because of the smile on his face and how much he just enjoys the moment. And what it's true in Julio's case, it's true if you're up or down in the game. You know, he has a way of making you feel like everything is achievable. We can come back in this. Don't worry, guys. We can do it. And I don't think that's naivety. I think it's just who he is. It's a positive emotional impact on a team every day.
You know, I've had a chance to watch him in person a couple of times in the last few weeks. I've been over at the ballpark, and one thing that jumped out to me, and I'm certainly no expert in this, but it just sure seems like he takes excellent routes to fly balls, that he truly sprints to the spot the ball's going to be, and then he's sitting there waiting for it. Obviously, the speed plays a factor, but how impressed have you been with his ability to play center field?
It's pretty amazing, actually. And from a fundamental perspective, just playing the outfield, you know, he's always behind the baseball. He fields it with the ball in front of him. He comes through it and makes accurate online throws. He hits his cutoff, man. He throws to the right base. It's, you know, those things that you usually learn over time. He just has those skills. And I want to say that those are things that have been like that since he was brought into the Mariners organization. But no, they've evolved very quickly over the last year and a half. And I really think this all began for Julio would be the escalation of all his peripheral non-batter's box skills. You know, it really began for him about the time that he went and played for Team Dominican in the Olympics. And he realized how close he was and how great he could be. And his work, I guess his work patterns and focus just changed in that moment. And he has been, for lack of a better way to put it, he has been a work animal since then. He doesn't stop. And he wants to achieve greatness, both for the team and individually. And I think it shows up in what he does every day.
We were talking a little bit this morning about Jesse Winker, who obviously has looked like a different player here over the last couple of weeks. What accounts for Jesse's turn in the last few weeks?
You know, I think we talked about it a little bit last week, if memory serves. You're seeing an easier swing, and I don't know an easier way to express it. You know, in the early months of the season, and you've got a couple of things that are piled up. You know, a player coming to a new team, experiencing new teammates, you know, trying to manage through difficult weather, a difficult schedule. We could create a full column of potential drawbacks or negatives. And, you know, what we saw was, you know, Jesse was really working to move the bat. And right now it looks just smooth and fluid. And he's taking easy swings and the ball's just jumping. And some of that could have to do with the fact that the weather has warmed up. He has gotten more comfortable in those situations. You know, here in the last 3 or 4 days, he's become a bit of a cult hero at the ballpark. You know, there's a lightness to what Jesse's doing right now. And all the while he took his walks and made great swing decisions. So as a result, you blink, and he went from a 580 OPS to a 700 OPS in just a couple of weeks. And I think that next jump is on the way because the at-bats have just been terrific.
Well, that'd be great, obviously. And just you mentioned the cult hero stuff. Did you know this was his personality? I mean, did you know that he was, whether it's quirky or, you know, you guys have had a couple of moments both with Houston and then with the Angels where he has been sort of right in the center of all of it. Did you know that that was part of the package with Jesse?
We knew he was a lively personality, but the, you know, Jesse's, and we have a pretty fiery team, the best way to put it. You know, we have a scrappy, fiery group, and I think Jesse's personality does fit us pretty well. And he has the, I guess, the ability or the lack of fear to go out and be the front man in those moments. And sometimes you need that. He plays a role in the story of our team that I'm not sure anyone else quite has the, you know, all of those traits to play. And it's part of his personality. And as we talked about last week, it's not something you can change. He just naturally brings that to the table. And I find it to be a positive.
Hey, what are you hoping to get out of Carlos Santana? You acquired him for a second time. So far, he's played more games than in the first time because you shipped him back out 10 days later. What's the goal behind Carlos Santana?
You know, we just don't know how long Ty's going to be out. And I expressed all of this to Carlos when I spoke to him on the phone on Monday morning. You know, and the first thing I said to him was, I promise this time you'll get a couple of the bats. He's, you know, Carlos had a great career. He is truly the in the world of the three true outcomes, especially the ability to dominate the strike zone. Carlos is one of the best players of his generation in managing the strike zone. He is on base. And as we go through this and not knowing when Ty will be back or if Ty will be back and really having had a difficult time, you know, getting productivity out of the DH position while we go through this, you know, what has become of just a barrage of injuries to some of our more impactful hitters, Carlos gives us an experienced hitter who's been on a bit of a bender for the last month. You know, the overall numbers look pretty average-ish, but at the end of the day, you know, for the last month or so, Carlos has been, I think, one of the top five players in Major League Baseball and on base, along with Jesse Winker. And, you know, we've seen he's raised his monthly OPS up to about 1,000, you know, or something thereabouts, coming into joining the Mariners. So all the things that Carlos has always done, he is showing signs that he's doing again. He's a very good defensive first baseman. And I think that showed up yesterday for us or the night before and kind of saved us a game. And the veteran know-how, you know, it's something we haven't had a ton of and as we've transitioned from our 2021 group to our 2022 group. And, you know, now adding guys like Carlos, having Justin Upton on the club, bringing in some veteran experience, while we need to get over this bridge, I think is the right thing to do. And you know, get Carlos in the mix while he's going hot and see if he can help us out.
Just to follow up on Ty France, because it didn't sound great the way you were talking about him there. How concerned are you about his ability to make his way back?
I don't really have the skill set to determine how concerned to be. But, you know, I do know that he experienced a very real injury. And Ty's a very tough player. He's a tough guy. I know he's in there working his tail off. And I would suspect that we will see Ty back in the lineup before most guys would get back. That just is, again, it's his personality, and you don't change that. But, you know, he did experience a pretty significant injury. And from the seat that I sit, you know, we are something closing in on about halfway through our season. We're about 5.5 games back of a playoff spot. And this is a pretty critical stretch of schedule that we're in between now and the All-Star break. And with no Mitch Haniger, with no Kyle Lewis, with no Ty France, now with no Taylor Trammell, with no Tom Murphy, we felt like we needed to do something. And if Ty comes back and joins sooner than later, then we get the advantage of doubling down and having the combination of Ty and Carlos Santana between first base and DH. But we really don't have any timeline on any of those players, truth be told. So, you know, adding to our mix was required for us to get through.
You mentioned, you know, all of those guys and all the injuries, especially with Tramiel going down. Was there any thought to bringing Kelnick up at that point?
No, you know, we are committed to solving the career development of Jared Kelnick. And I think you've heard that in my voice. Jared is an extremely talented player, and, you know, and through no fault of his own, with a missed season and what, you know, frankly, pointing the glass at me or ourselves was probably a quick trigger on bringing him to the big leagues in the first place before he solved some of, you know, the developmental challenges that we want to see him solve this time before we put him in the big leagues. And, you know, what's happening on the surface, his performance right now in AAA has been excellent. He's working hard. He knows what he needs to focus on, and we're in no rush to bring him back until we see that happen.
So what I'm heading down there today. I'm going to go watch him and talk to him before the game today, because I find him to be such a fascinating character and a thoughtful kid and all of that. What is he working on right now? What does he need to show you?
We're going to leave that between Jared and the Mariners. There's no need for us to make that a focal point of what happens with him every day.
Okay. So I'll go down and I'll see if I can drag it out of him. Something tells me I won't. Something tells me that if it's between him and the Mariners, that's the way it's supposed to be. I enjoyed watching Sam Haggerty yesterday, not just because of the Godfather walk-up music, which is classic and great, but because he just seems like a different kind of player. I'm not sure exactly how to ask this, but is there value to be found in guys who maybe don't have the highest exit velocity in baseball, but find other ways to get on base, to get hits, and then affect the game through other means?
But everybody has a certain way that they can impact the game. And, you know, Sam actually has impact ability. Sam's perhaps our best base runner. You know, maybe he and Dylan Moore. They're outstanding when they get on the bases. The decisions they make, their base-stealing instincts and ability, and, you know, the ability to advance multiple bases at a time. Sam brings that skill to the table. And when he gets on base, we can make things happen. And, you know, contact ability is a skill. And on base is a skill. And, you know, we're not six deep, eight deep in guys who can hit the ball over the fence with any regularity. But you can build depth like we have with a player like Sam, who can get on base and he can make things happen. And he's versatile enough to play a number of different positions. And, you know, it makes him kind of an ideal utility player at the big league level. And for us to score runs in bulk, we have to be on base. And yesterday we saw moments where we started to get the big hit when runners were on base. And that's something that's been, you know, a problem for us throughout the course of the year. But we're going to just double down on guys that can get on base, create contact, and move around the bases, because it's really hard to go out and find that power element. When you find so much power on the IL right now, you can't go replace all of that. Carlos can do some of it, but by and large, the way you're going to get through the valley of injured players is just by getting on base more and creating action and playing small ball. And those are areas where Sam Haggerty excels.
Jerry, thank you. As we said, it's been a pretty crazy, interesting week, and just certainly entertaining and providing us plenty of stuff to talk about. So enjoy the fourth, and I'll talk to you next week.
All right, you got it, Mike.
All right, there you go. There's Jerry DePoto, Mariners president of baseball operations, who joins us every Thursday, at 8:30. And a lot in there. And you hear some of the frustration. Again, GM point of view, a little bit different from other points of view when it comes to guys fighting on the field, because he knows what's happening. He's the one who's got to go deal with that. He's the one who's got to go make up the difference and worry about guys getting hurt and, you know, handle the suspensions and all of that. So I understand where Jerry's coming from. GMs kind of can't get caught up in that the same way as a field manager and everybody else can, because they have to look at it differently. So good stuff there. And he certainly didn't want to give me much on what's going on with Kelnick right now. So I'll talk to him today and we'll see what direction Jared goes with it as well. I'm not going to, you know, try to drag stuff out of him. But I agree with Jerry. right? I getting his development solved is more important than bringing him up right now. I said it earlier today. I've been saying it for a while. I totally agree. Getting Jared Kelnick's long-term development right is the key, and everything else, to me, kind of comes after that. So I'm glad to hear they're doing it the way they are. I'm glad that there was not even really a thought to bring him up when Tremel got hurt, and that when he's ready, hopefully we get to see the real Jared Kelnick come up, because they need it eventually. They don't need it this minute, but they need to get what they were hoping for out of a guy who was a top-five prospect in the game just 2 years ago. So, good stuff, Jerry DePoto. And if you missed any of that, of course, you can always find it on wherever you get your podcast, because we put up every a minute of every show up on our podcast page, either at seattlesports.com or wherever you get your podcast. You can go subscribe. We appreciate it. And, hey, give us a nice rating. We're back to 4-6. I don't know if you guys know that.
Ooh.
It's been a while. We kind of fell down to a 4-6. I think my Kyle Seager comments really hurt us for a little while.
Do you?
Yeah, I saw it take
we
a little bit of a dip.
We didn't fall down to a 4-6. Like,
well, all right. Well, you know, it was me. Anyway, I didn't say our Kyle Seager comments. I said it was mine. I'm responsible for our failings.
Yeah, we need to get some more reviews. Those were fun.
Yeah, all right. Well, so people head over to Apple Podcasts, because I don't think we've seen a review. There's one about a banana. I still check it now and again. But yeah, you can head over. We wouldn't mind a nice review now and again.
Did you try your banana ketchup yet?
Not yet, but I showed it to Heather last night when she got home, and she was pretty excited about it. So we may look for something to use it on here in the next day or so. All right, up next. I haven't played this sound yet. I've been kind of sitting on it all day. I heard it yesterday, and I got to tell you, I don't agree with it at all. But I really respect the person who said it. So I'll play it, and I'll consider it, but it's really hard for me to buy it. It's next. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.